Make a Change with Danny Pike on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey.
Good morning. So in the next hour, we're returning to our Make a Change week. And we want you to have a think about how you can feel mentally fitter. It's all about being calmer, less stressed, less anxious, basically about you being more content. So I'd like you to call me and tell me how you plan to feel better if you feel like you want to make that change. Give me a ring on 03459 570057. We have a team of people who are used to dealing with a whole range of mental and mind issues. So you can give them a call and you know you'll be through to a good listening ear. 03459 570057. If you missed it yesterday, here's the story so far.
Make a Change with Danny Pike.
Is there one thing that you might like to change to make your life even better?
Wanna make a change for once in my life.
This texter says, I'll make an effort to get a good night's sleep and go to bed at a reasonable time rather than spending time on social media networks or surfing the internet that I personally find is just becoming a waste of valuable time.
There are things that you can do that are going to help you manage.
So you've been to anger management?
Yes, sir.
Did that help?
Well, I didn't think so.
Sounds like you've had a really difficult time.
I've had an unbelievable year, actually. Be honest, I met a new man in my life. We've been together a year now, and I get married next month.
That's great.
Oh, that was so lovely to hear, actually.
And he always starts the day with these words written on a note by his bedside. It says, good morning, beautiful. Yesterday is over. All your slip-ups are forgiven. The score is zero. Make it positive today.
And I've written something about you, and I want to read it to you.
You'll make me cry.
I found out, you know, how far I've come, and I've also sort of seen other people's journeys.
It's a great time for everyone to think about their own mental health and think about good mental health.
It's hard, you know, not to feel a sense of empowerment or some, you know, it's as if you've been there and rounded the corner or something.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much.
Make a Change with Danny Pike.
And once again today, we'd like you to tell us how you might improve your sense of well-being. Some of the ideas that came in yesterday, spending more time with family, getting out into the garden, writing stories, which help one of our listeners deal with feeling angry. So call us now and have a chat about what change you might like to make. And we've got experts on the line who can help you. 03459 570057 is our number. And you can text us with suggestions of things that have worked for you. We'll read them out and it might inspire somebody else. You can text me on 81333, start your message with the word radio. Also this morning, we're going to be focusing on change that happens when you're at your lowest ebb. And we'll meet a couple of guests during this hour of the programme who that's happened to. They've been at a very lowest point in their life, and that is when the biggest change has happened for them, including Ruby Wax, who we all know as this big, loud, brash, talky, funny person from the TV. But in one of the stories she tells me in this hour of the programme, she was actually in the Priory suffering from depression when she had to go and conduct a TV interview with somebody who was depressed. And that was a very tough time for Ruby. So talk about Make a Change with us today. 03459 570057.
Make a Change with Danny Pike.
We're doing something this week we've never done before, and we really had no idea about how it would and how it will go for the rest of the week. But yesterday was incredible. It's our Make a Change week, day two, and we're challenging you to consider making small changes which could make a big difference to your well-being. And yesterday we took some amazing calls from you, both on and off the air, all about what's getting you down and how you plan to turn things around.
The thing that I really struggled with is guilt. Anything, as silly as it sounds, like, you know, if I was to step on a snail, I'd feel guilty that I'd killed it.
I've only just got out of bed. I feel dreadful. I've been awake again all night.
Oh,
I haven't slept for years.
A first girlfriend left me leaving, holding the baby, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so I brought him up, and the only job that I could get with a living quarters was looking after this chap. And during the course of the 3 years that I was living there, he had been abusing my son.
Oh, God.
Good morning. You're the first person I've spoken to for about 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Well, I do have a son. I haven't seen or heard from him till yesterday, and he walked in and he said, "Are you seeing a psychiatrist?"
Right.
I don't need a psychiatrist. I just need somebody to talk to.
The most important thing that you can do is start slowing your breathing down. And even during the day, every time you notice yourself thinking about it, to start slowing your breath down.
Anyway, thank you so much.
All right, well, you're welcome.
What I want to try and focus on is things that give you value, rather than a lot of bad memories.
Well, the things that would give me value is be able to go out and do the garden.
I've got to learn to steer myself in a correct way, a way that won't put me into any harm, and before I lose my temper.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks so much for...
Well, thank you for listening.
So, in all honesty, thank you for picking up the phone and getting involved with us yesterday. I've just stepped outside the studio into our production area here at BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey, where we're taking your calls. And alongside our regular team, who do a sterling job producing this show, we have a couple of people who spend a lot of their working life talking to people who are in different stages of mental health. As we said yesterday, we all have a mental health. Some of us are better than others, and you know, we all have a varying degree of mental health from time to time. And John Potter is with a company called Company Paradiso. He's been working with some people on the project before we brought it to air, and he's just taking a call at the moment. So John, how was the reaction to yesterday?
Reaction's been great. We've been getting a huge variety of calls. I'm just talking to Anne at the moment about the importance of laughing. And she's talking about the importance of massaging your innards when you when you laugh, how important that is.
Okay, well, come up with your best gags for her, if you would. So, John, Lilith as well, you've worked with a lot of people. In fact, we'll hear some of the work you were doing with our group on the programme tomorrow. What's struck you about the calls that came into us yesterday?
Well, we've had lots of varied calls, really interesting calls. Some people looking for really simple solutions, small things that they can use to make big changes. Some people just simply wanted to share their story, which in itself can change a lot of things.
And sharing their successes as well?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, Lilith, John, we'll let you get back to your calls this morning. Thank you very much. Today, we're looking about change and also the point that quite often change happens when you're at your very lowest point. So we'll talk about that on the programme today. And I wonder if that is you. Have you reached a really low point in your life? And that is when you found that change happened the most. So I've just stepped back in from our phone room into the quiet of the studio because there's somebody joining me now who can talk all about this. I'll put my headphones on, take my seat and introduce you to my next guest. He's a comedian called Gareth Berliner, and Gareth uses some challenging bits of his life in his stand-up act. And although his story, on the face of it, is quite bleak, it's not only quite uplifting, it's pretty funny as well. Gareth has Crohn's disease and tried to take his own life when his quality of life, hooked up to a machine, was at an all-time low. Gareth, good morning.
Morning, Danny.
Thanks for telling us your story today. So Crohn's disease, what is that and when did you get it?
Crohn's disease generally is inflammation of the small intestine, can also move to the large intestine or further along, anywhere along the bowel. And in my case, I had it significantly, had quite a large amount of surgery and ended up in a situation in the year 2000 where I spent kind of millennium New Year's Eve in the hospital. And owing to so much surgery, I ended up with a tube stuck permanently in situ in my chest through which I would have to hook up to nutritional fluid.
And this started at quite a young age, didn't it?
Yeah, I was diagnosed when I was about 11 or 12.
And what impact did it have on your life?
Well, a massive impact. I mean, it really spoiled my school years, to be honest, especially as I'd started when we first started GCSEs, which were very much coursework related. And of course, I wasn't able to be at school quite a lot because I was going to the hospital and staying at home. And then it impacted again on my A-levels. I ended up having to leave my A-levels. And the first two jobs I ever got, I lost both of those jobs, each case after about 6 months, again, owing to being ill and having to go into hospital.
And this is very interesting because, you know, Crohn's is a physical disease, isn't it? It affects you physically. Yes. But also this has had a big impact on your health mentally.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I dealt with bouts of depression over the years, particularly, you know, the difficult times of going through your teen years when you're not able to go out and meet people and go to parties because you're not feeling well. So it's kind of a fundamental stage of development in your life. And yeah, I think significantly ended up impacting mentally. Large periods of being in hospital, that kind of makes you become institutionalized. Large doses of opiate painkillers, morphine for 6 months, lots of surgery, has a massive impact on a person mentally, really.
And as I was saying before, change often happens when you're at your lowest ebb. Can you talk to us about your low point?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I talked about it in a show I did in 2005 in Edinburgh called Gutless, ironically. Basically, I reached a point in 2000. I was stuck in my flat. I was, at that point, living on my own, hooked up to this new nutritional machine that was feeding me through this line in my chest for 23 and a half hours a day, rationed to about half a glass of water a day, smoking a large amount of marijuana at the time as well. I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink, so I was recreationally just trying to escape my situation. And it was kind of at that point I hit the lowest ebb and I constantly was thinking suicidal thoughts. And I was too afraid to share it with anyone because I didn't want to upset, you know, it was all about not wanting to hurt or upset anyone else. And that's when, for me at that point, the significant choice of change, which was a stupid choice, was suicide, because I thought, well, just end my life, that will cause the change I wanted. Fortunately for me, I wasn't successful.
But you did attempt it.
Yeah, well, I'd taken a large amount of painkillers with alcohol, etc., etc. My plan had been to undo the tube in my chest, which would have given me a heart attack and I would have bled to death. So I had the easy way out, but I needed to be out of it to feel strong enough to have the guts, again, ironically, to pull the tube out. And it was while blacking out and things in the bath, I'd put on clothes because I didn't want to be found naked, because I thought that would be embarrassing. Those are the kind of crazy thoughts you have at that point. Mm-hmm. And I'd put on some jeans. I'd lost some weight and they were quite loose. And I'd been in the bath about 2 hours, blacking out, waking up on and off. And then suddenly this thought came into my head. It was the first rational thought I'd had in months, which obviously was the voice in me that wanted to stay alive and really didn't want to bow out. And as I was blacking out, I just suddenly thought, you've been laying in this bath 2.5 hours. These jeans should fit pretty good now.
Shrink to fit.
Yeah. But it was actually that moment of sort of laughter that just absolutely woke me up to my situation. And then I was absolutely terrified of the overdose working, of me dying, having had this moment of clarity. And again, I couldn't bring myself to phone anyone to say, well, I even failed at suicide, because that seemed ridiculous. And for about 2 weeks, in all honesty, I was manically high from having survived. And that was great, and it you know, gave me moments to think and start planning my life. But inevitably, the mental health and depression was still an issue, and so within 2 weeks, I was down again. The lucky moment for me at that point was I was able to lift the phone and this time call someone, because I knew what had happened last time, and say, I need some help. And it was at that point that I got a tremendous amount of help.
Gareth, thank you for telling us about that. You know, perhaps quite an extreme example of a low there. Yeah. What can we take from that if people are just maybe spending a few days feeling a bit down rather than suicidally depressed? What can other people learn from your experience there?
I think the really important thing is to stay in the moment and to not escape if you can help yourself, whether that's drink, drugs, alcohol, running away, to be talking too much about. It was interesting, it's come up a few times in your show today about not being stuck in the past. And I've managed to use my past positively in my future ever since as a comedian, to tell the story, to share it with other people, to have them change where they're at. I think the most important point is being in the moment, accepting where you're at, and asking for help when you need it, not being afraid to do that.
Do people feel a bit bashful about laughing along with you at this terrible point in your life when you put it in your stand-up show?
No, I think when I do it in stand-up, obviously the audience can see I'm there, so they know that I survived and that it's not a sad ending to the story. I think people take a lot of comfort in it, in knowing that even at that point, there was still something within me, which I think is within all of us, that ultimately wants to protect and wants to look after us. You know, because ultimately it comes down to the individual to sort out their problems. However much other people may have ideas on what you can do and how you can help yourself, you have to be able to take the first step yourself and ask for some help.
Gareth, please stay with us, if you will, for the hour today on Make a Change on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. And I'm sure Gareth would be more than happy to talk to you if you are at a point that is quite low and you want to know what to do next. How do you change how you're feeling and thinking at the moment? And if you've been there as well and been to a point where change has happened because you're at your lowest ebb, would you share your story with us today? 03459 570057 or text us 81333, start your message with radio. And of course, the changes we're talking about this week don't have to be seismic. They don't have to be like Gareth experienced, just small changes that you feel you would like to make and how you go about it. We have our team outside who have a lot of experience in this field and they'll be more than happy to talk to you. 03459 570057. In a few minutes, we'll hear about the changes Ruby Wax made to her life when she was at her lowest point. And we're inviting you to get involved. Think about something in your life you'd like to change. It doesn't have to be a massive change, just something that you think will help you feel calmer, more content, generally happier about life. But we're also talking about some bigger cases here as well. We heard from Gareth Billiner, who's still with us in our Birmingham studio this morning, talking about when he was at his lowest ebb, and Taya from Brighton on the line as well. Taya, good morning to you.
Good morning, Danny.
Morning, and Gareth is here as well.
Morning.
So do tell us, making a change at your lowest ebb, Taya, what was happening?
Well, it was back in 2003 when I was only 26 years old, and I was feeling pretty unhappy already. I'd had a really stressful job and a really bad breakup from a relationship, and I just started to get really, really ill. So a bit like Gareth, it kind of like the change came from getting ill. But I think me getting ill was the consequence of lots of difficult, stressful things that had happened for a long time. But because I was the kind of person that just got on with it and tried harder and didn't feel like I was really good enough in life, I sort of tried to ignore that. And finally, I just got lots of viruses and started to feel this kind of level of exhaustion that a 26-year-old shouldn't experience, and to the point that I couldn't get out of bed.
Was that diagnosed?
Finally. And so I got to the point where I just thought, I can't go to my job. And I had a stressful job at the time. I was doing long shifts and going out on my own to medical emergencies sometimes in the night. And I just thought, I can't do this anymore, and left. But it took about a year and a half to get a diagnosis. And I was finally diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, which is a diagnosis of exclusion. So it's the kind of diagnosis when they've ruled out all those other things. Yeah, I was so ill, it was hard to even go to the shops across the road.
Is it also one of those things that's perhaps misunderstood, Taya? Were you still getting people saying, come on, you know, buck yourself up, get your idea, you know, get yourself sorted out, come on?
Yes, absolutely. Because often with chronic fatigue, you kind of look okay. And the times that people would see me, it would be the time that I put on lots of makeup and I was making a really big effort and had managed to get myself out of bed. So, yeah, people were saying, come on, just, you know, get out of bed, get on with it, do some voluntary work. And I was feeling like, I can't. What, you know, what's wrong with me that I feel so terrible? The kind of exhaustion where you know, you feel like you're just dragging yourself around.
And what was the low point, and what made you make that change?
Yeah, the low point was, I thought, I'm 26. I'm living, I have a less of quality of life than someone who's 86, perhaps. Couldn't see my friends or do a job. There were times, like Gareth said, where I thought, do I want to be here still, because it felt so terrible? And I thought to myself, yes, I do. And what do I want to do about it? And I started to think, well, maybe there's a mind-body connection here. It's not that that it wasn't and isn't a real physical illness, but I thought, what is it that's led to this? So I started reading books and going on a few courses and learning about myself. I don't think I knew myself. I didn't know who I was, what I liked. I didn't know how to listen to my own feelings.
Gareth, is any of this sounding familiar to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's a thing, Joseph Campbell, the great philosopher, talks about the hero's journey, and he calls it the call to adventure, and it's where people experience this crisis point, I think, where you suddenly wake up and think, you know, okay, do I want to be here or not? And if I do, what am I going to do about it to feel better?
Yeah, totally. It's very much like about battling it for yourself. And when that moment comes, I think it's a real impact.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
So in the 10 years since then, Taya, what's changed?
I would say pretty much everything. I think I went on this big kind of adventure, I suppose, learning about myself. And I now call myself a fun expert life coach and work with people to help them to have a more fun life, because I realised that was a big crucial thing that was missing from my life, was learning how to be playful and creative. And so I trained in that, but I also and gradually got better. It took me 6 years to completely get better, and many people never get better from chronic fatigue syndrome. So I feel, you know, every day, it sounds really cheesy, but a bit like a miracle to have my health back again. And also, I tried and did many things on my journey to get better, and one of those was improvised comedy. And so, and I actually ended up meeting my husband on an improvised comedy course, and we just got married a month ago.
Oh, awesome. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Any tips for a comedy, Gareth, from you? I don't know.
Oh, I mean, I'm just finding it interesting because I found my wife almost the same way, in that I met her through comedy again. So, I mean, I feel like everything significant has happened since such a low moment, you know. Well, totally relate.
Taya, thanks for telling us your story. Take care. Many thanks.
Many thanks. Thank you. Bye.
Good to hear from you. 03459 570057. It's BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey, our Make a Change week. Have you made a change at your lowest ebb? And would you tell us about it today? Give me a ring. You can text me 81333. Start your message with radio.
BBC Sussex with Danny Pike. Make a Change with Danny Pike on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey.
Day two of our Make a Change week, and we're challenging you to consider making small changes which could make a big difference to your well-being. With us in this hour today is comedian Gareth Berliner, who really changed his life when it got to the very lowest ebb. And Gareth, we're about to hear from Ruby Wax, who also made a change in her life when she hit rock bottom. Very different for her, though, because she was very much in the public eye during all of this, so that must make it even more tricky.
Yeah, I think under the spotlight is much harder. I mean, when you're young, it's hard enough having people deal with it. When you're on telly or on the radio, like Stephen Fry, Ruby Wax, you're under the spotlight.
And is it brave of somebody like Ruby and Stephen as well, also to talk about their mental health in public? Because, you know, what part of the conversation we have with Ruby is that she says that she was scared of what her industry, the TV industry, would think about her if she admitted to her mental health issues.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that in the industry, actually, we're all quite afraid like that. And I think if we actually look at it, the language that's used in the media anyway, when we're talking about people who could be dealing with problems, we're often just saying an addiction problem, they're partying too hard, they're exhausted. And often this is people dealing with their own mental health issues.
Gareth, stay with us and listen to Ruby Wax, who stepped away from being in front of the camera when she was struggling with depression. Now, after time at both the Priory and Oxford University, where she gained an MA in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, she's written a book called Sane New World, in which she tries to help us understand how our minds work and how we can rewire our thinking. And we met up after she'd given a talk last week at the Grand in Brighton.
I just finished a course at Oxford, I like to say that, called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And mindfulness seems to be the new zeitgeist because, A, you don't need to go to somebody, and the government approves it through NICE, because obviously someday we won't be able to afford therapy or medication. So this is a way to self-regulate.
So for somebody who's new to this concept, can you explain for us what mindfulness means?
You know how it's hard to pay attention? And what that means, you know, you think you're paying attention, but your brain is somewhere thinking about, I want to eat something, I should be doing this. It keeps you up at night. So by learning to address attention in the moment, but without giving yourself a hard time, you learn to kind of deal with those obsessive thoughts that go on and on, those critical things. Now, all of us have it.
Yeah, because you differentiate between the normal mad and the mad mad in your book, don't you?
Yeah. But the same thing with your mind. You need it to, like, problem solve. Obviously, we wouldn't have survived to problem solve, to get in a deadline, to whatever. You need your brain. But 47% of your time, some Harvard research said, is that you're mind wandering. You're going future, you're going back, you're not present. It's not as if the mind wandering is making anybody any happier.
So what do we do to try and calm our mind in between the times when we really need to be active and thinking?
Yeah, well, here's the choice. With mindfulness, it's using another part of the brain called the insula, which isn't the amygdala. The amygdala is the high alarm, and it brings the voices and the criticism. It's the bit that gives you interception, like when you have a stomach ache or you stub your toe. You do feel into your body. So if you attend to one of your senses, like just listening, or feeling your behind on the seat or your feet on the floor, you don't think about it. You sense it. You're actually pulling the anxiety. You can't be anxious and sensing something in your body at the same time. It's like being a car in two gears. So if you practice that, like just a few minutes a day, and you look at the brain research, it has tremendous repercussions.
So are you telling me that all the time that you were on our TVs and doing comedy and hosting chat shows, you were battling?
No, I wasn't. Depression. You can't go on depression. You can't have depression and go on a stage.
You can't?
No, you can't.
Okay.
It's not something you can fake. Okay. It's like saying somebody to Alzheimer's, would you please remember what you did yesterday? When I was really sick, you can't leave a chair, let alone find the shower.
But were you battling with those things all the time?
No, I have it once every 3 years, once every 5 years. Then as time went on, you get them longer and deeper. And then I thought, okay, my job is on the line. So I thought, I got to do something about this.
What, you mean you can't perform on a day when
somebody's
booked you?
What if it happens?
Yeah,
what if it happens? So, and also, if people found out, I'd probably be fired, because mental illness scares a lot of people, like I'll pull a knife on them.
This week we're saying to people, make a change if you want to. And you made that massive change by comparison of finishing on TV, Ruby. Can you talk us through that and your decision you came to?
I did it for 25 years. Eventually, A, you lose your mojo, and B, everybody can see you lost your mojo. So that started to happen. I thought, been there, done it. And then, of course, other people are coming up behind you, and they imitate you, and they're probably doing it better than you can, because now you're not interested. So I thought, I got to get my brain cells going again. You know, my IQ has turned into a houseplant. So I decided I'd go back to school, and I crashed a course in neuroscience at UCL. Nothing to me is more interesting than finding out what goes on in your brain.
And then you do talk a lot about how you've been over the years. There was a period when you were counselling people with depression, yet returning to being treated yourself. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I did a TV show for the BBC, and I was supposed to interview somebody about depression. But again, I didn't want to get caught that I had it. So my husband picked me up from an institution. All the inmates said, you must be crazy, which is high praise indeed. I left the institution. I went to interview the person with depression, looking like hell. And they could see in my eyes, I was way screwed up. But most of the time with depression, nobody looks in your eyes. If they did, they'd see you look like a dead animal. Well, the person with the depression spotted it, but didn't say anything, thought, this woman's crazier than I am. Then after the interview, I put my hat on and my coat, and I went back to the institution. And they all gave me a round of applause.
Really?
Yeah.
What can we draw from that?
We can draw from that's how desperate I was for people not to know. You know, I'm a celeb. You know, I'm on TV. How dare I have something that you can't see? It's 1 in 4. Read my lips. It has nothing to do with celebrity. It's somebody in Mumbai who's got it. It's somebody who's in anywhere in the world. It's 1 in 4. But it's some people who are in the West who have shoes on our feet and a nice car. We're just disgusted with ourselves for having this mental thing, as if it has anything to do with the state we're in. People win an Oscar and kill themselves. It's got nothing to do with success.
What effect has this had on your family and the people around you? How difficult has it been for them?
Well, my husband knows how to cover for me. So he hid it from the kids when they were little. He said I was doing a documentary, so they didn't know. Because you don't want them to have this image of the crazy mother in a turret with her hair on fire. So when they were 16, he eventually took them to where I was, and they could see other people who had what I had are really, some of them were very bright. And because you're not completely depressed. Again, mindfulness helps. There is a part of you that's okay. You know, you aren't your sickness. So I was studying mindfulness then. Stand back a little bit. The voices will continue, but the center of me, the core, and the sense around me is not sick, isn't sick.
No. And was your husband covering for you useful at times? At other times, did he need to be stricter with you?
No, he just left me there to heal. If somebody has depression, if you're strict with them, you're going to accelerate that illness. No, he really believed I had depression, which is the most important thing. And he waited until it passed. And it could take a week and it could take a year.
And what did the children say to you?
Well, now they're really proud because I do a show where I talk about it on stage. So they think that's incredible. They're really proud of that one.
Okay, just finally, Ruby, people listening to us today in Sussex and Surrey, maybe they're in the 3 and 4, the normal mad. Can you give us one or two things you've learned in your experience that could help people just in everyday lives? If people wanted to make a change of some sort this week, how do they go about that? What's the first step? And can you do it on your own?
Yeah, you can do it on your own. You try to stop. It's really hard. When you're caught in that slipstream of answering endless emails, I can't do this too. Maybe at the 75th, close the lid. And then if your kid is there, notice what the kid is saying. Because you're not going to have him forever. There'll always be another email. So it's pulling the brakes. But don't punish yourself for doing the email. We're all like that. On holiday, if you can't shut it off, close the lid and concentrate on the swimming pool and feel the water.
Ruby Wax, and for more of her experience, see her new book called Sane New World, Taming the Mind. It's out now. Ruby Wax, Sane a New World, Taming the Mind. So we're talking about change that happens when you're at your lowest ebb on the programme today as part of our Make a Change Week on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. Let's hear another story from a person whose life turned a corner when they were at a particularly low ebb. Sam feared for her life after her husband attacked and then stalked her and her children. And Sam's change came, she got to a refuge and was able to start putting her experience down on paper.
I enthusiastically bounced out of the university gates after graduating under the assumption I was going to hit the big time. However, I quickly found myself back in the humdrum of ordinary working life. The stagnation of nothingness left me with a yearning for excitement and a desire to seek out a life with a pulse. I had been waiting too long for a man on a white charger who never came. Then another type of man came my way, and hearing the dulcet tones of my biological clock ticking louder and louder in my ear, I caved in to the relentless sound. I met him when I was 35. He was 12 years older than me. As a person, he was very exciting and a hard worker. I mean, just, you know, good fun to be around, really. A family was established, but something didn't feel right to me. I had a desperate need to be alone with the children, but there was nothing to base this feeling on. So I sat and planned, but never did anything with those plans.
I guess it's funnier from where you're standing, 'cause from over here I miss the joke.
I was in the relationship for 4.5 years, and it wasn't a violent relationship. He was verbally abusive, he was emotionally and psychologically abusive, but I think the only form of abuse that I actually recognised was the verbal abuse. I didn't see what was actually happening. I knew that I was extremely unhappy, but I really couldn't put my finger on it.
I'd be smiling if I wasn't so desperate.
And then the strange feeling revealed itself in the form of the grim father. Black smoke consumed my family, but I had become skilled at holding my breath, and I and the children survived to see another day. One night, after I put my children to bed, he attacked me with a hunting knife, and he tried to break my neck. He backed off, left the house, and I phoned the police. He was arrested. He was released on bail conditions, which he completely ignored. And we were not able to go back home again for 6 months because we were so terrified. He literally was hunting us down. And this just went on and on. On one occasion, he sent me a text photograph of a noose which read, "Not long now, my flower."
I'd be less angry if it was my decision.
But no protection was forthcoming from the outside world, and I soon realised that the only way my family were to survive was for me to become both protector and warrior. The real turning point for me was when I was in the refuge and I was treated, literally, not only not being helped, but treated as though I was a criminal. I felt imprisoned. I definitely feel that it took for me to be in that safe place for that change to happen. I had a huge urge to write about my situation, and I enrolled myself onto a screenwriting course. And then through doing that, I enrolled onto a master's in creative writing. And during that time, I explored the possibilities of creative writing as a therapeutic tool. And I'm hoping that this project will develop and grow, and that I will be able to work with women who've experienced domestic violence and stalking and be able to highlight those issues. I sought out my own white charger, and I continue to ride on through the black smoke, which is never far from home.
That's Sam's story on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey, our Make a Change week. And listening to that is Fash Giachi, who runs a supported emergency housing scheme in Brighton. Fash has helped turn many people's lives around while staying at his hostel. And Fash is here to talk about those transformations and one of his own as well. Fash, welcome. Thanks for coming in. What do you make of Sam's story there?
It's a brilliant story. It's kind of confirms the belief that everybody has to make a decision at some time, at some stage in their lives. And I think Sam was forced into a decision that she made to make the change. She might have made the same decision earlier on before it got to a stage that it did. A lot of people go through the same process. Some people make the decisions very early on and therefore they don't go through the associated pain. And some people are find themselves in a position that they have to come up with that decision that will change their lives. And so everything starts from a decision.
I said in the introduction that you've helped turn many people's lives around, but they have to want to make that change themselves. You can facilitate that, but how do you try and do that?
What you say is absolutely correct. The old saying that you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, is absolutely correct. Even any psychiatrist, any psychotherapist, any analyst will tell you that if people don't want to be there, it's not going to work. So people have to make the decision for themselves. Alcoholics have to stand up and accept that I'm an alcoholic and that I really don't want to be an alcoholic. So if you want to give up smoking, you can. But if you're under pressure from others, you will always have a sneaky smoke. So how we do that is by taking away the element of willpower, which is people are relying on willpower to make things happen at the moment that is needed. But instead, in order to help them to program themselves to be able to create that change once they've decided that they want to do it. We can't make them make that decision. They have to want to do it.
And if they've made that change, then you can help them. Tell me, Fash, about the big transformation in your family and what you learned from it.
Well, I was your standard, boring, normal, very, very normal businessman. And a few years ago, about 6 years ago now, my daughter became ill with ME. And she was ill for 3 years. The last 8 months, she was virtually bedridden. So it was a very traumatic time for us. I didn't recognize it as a proper medical condition to start with, to be fair, because she was just tired. And I said, well, you know, sometimes I feel tired. But it got worse and worse, and we tried absolutely everything. We had a you know, some clinician in North London that gave her, you know, sort of herbs from the Himalayas and all kind. We tried everything, and medical and herbal and alternative health and acupuncture, and nothing worked. But then one day she came across this kind of mindfulness solution, which she went off to and came back hugely improved. And she's continued to improve since then.
Can you give me an idea of before and after? What was she able to do before when she was gripped by ME and then afterwards?
Okay. Well, before, a week before, she had ME and she couldn't walk around, you know, just the perimeter of our own house, not the garden, just the house, before she had to sit down and I had to carry her from bench to bench in Sheffield Park. And I myself suffered with asthma and hay fever, which isn't a big deal, I know, but I'd had that for about 40 years. But then a week later, both of us ran barefoot up Devil's Dyke, which was quite an achievement. So, and that was just in 1 week of actually being able to control the hormones that are created by your mental process that give you the conditions that we all suffer from.
And it sounded like at the start of that you were very cynical about this.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
So what impact did that change have on you and your thinking?
Well, we, our family, we paid £1,650 to be shown this secret, which isn't a secret. The secret is that there's no secret, and it's an ability that we all possess within us. So I was totally blown away by the fact that the stuff that I already knew was so powerful. So I wanted to set up a facility where we could make this more public. So we did exactly that, and we offered that to the people that couldn't afford it for free, and for the people that could afford it for £40 a session, which was very different. Because of that, we set up this organization called the Happy Cell, which became very successful, and which is now led into the Smile to Live charity, which is working with the council to help work with the homeless people.
Fash Giachi, thank you for telling us your story on our Make a Change Week on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. We continue tomorrow at 10:00.